ocean.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Japan, right? So it's like it's also very prone to to natural disasters to some extent.
Yes.
It's a thing that, you know, I've been talking a lot with Icelandic friends about, like, you know, a thing that Danish people are not used to live with the nature as a factor of anything, but you know, it might be beauty, or it's a bit
nature
cold,
is,
you
like,
know,
something you look at paintings.
Yeah, exactly. It isn't something that, you know, directly affects your opportunities.
Right.
Like at most, then it's like a rainy day that makes you moody.
Yeah.
Like today.
Yeah, which is heavy, but you know, I think it does affect people in another way that you know, you have to respect nature in a more serious way than, you know, the winter depression or, you know.
You're more vulnerable.
Yeah, exactly.
In countries where there are earthquakes or hurricanes, disasters from natural disasters.
No, definitely. But I think, so one of my earliest memories of the Philippines, because when I was younger, then we went there for like every 2 years up until I was, I don't know, 12 or something. And the first time I went there, it's like the sheer humidity that, you know, like really dry, like takes you over. You're not used to that. And then also it's a big contrast of a very high density polluted city, like very built on top of each other. And then you get out of the city and it's just fields, you know, and it's just very, there's also very, like a lot of parts that are completely untouched. I remember like going to, you know, to beaches where there was no one. Wonderful, untouched beaches, because, you know, it's only for locals, kind of. And maybe that, you know, constructed a false idea of how beaches needed to look like when I was younger. Oh, this is very nice. I like the ocean. And then you go, you know, to very, very popular areas, like, oh yeah, this is not the same. But it's very contrastful, and then like, thankfully, I never experienced any like natural disaster. But of course, you know, you hear stories, even like our house there got flooded and all that, and that's very humbling. As well.
Yeah, that's a good word. I also. You know, I remember when every summer I went to school in Japan, and all the chairs had cushions,
right? And straps.
No. So if there came an earthquake, you could take the cushion and take it over your head. And we had these small courses where, you know, if an earthquake happens, we have to do this and that, and go to that place in the court field and courtyard, and, you know. It's something that is in your mind, you know, in one way or another.
Exactly. And that we don't have here.
No,
in Europe,
we're really
in
lucky to be spared of that.
Yeah. Because I've also brought this globe so that it would be like easier to talk about a place that probably very few of our listeners has been to, because when you kind of, when I imagine Philippine, I thought it was like at equator, and then you see it's a little bit north of, it's kind of the same as the southern of India, it's southern neighbors is Indonesia, and to the north we have China and Taiwan.
Indeed.
And then, the capital is called Manila, and because you brought like this this person that like we asked you if there was like one story you wanted to bring into our podcast. And then you mentioned this artist, tour guide, and political activist called Carlos Sildran.
Yes.
Which he was born in 1972 and then he died 2 years ago, 2019. And he lived for most of his life in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I understood, he died in Madrid.
Yes.
In the prison for some of his activism. He was sent into prison. Was born in Philippine Makati, which is it close to Manila or is it inside
Manila? It's a region of Manila.
Okay. And then he was doing a lot of tour guides in an area called Intramuros.
Yes.
Which was the historical walled city that was the first place the Spanish they built in Manila. And they raised this church, San Agustin, where Carlos Sildren was doing this performance 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I understood, he was also brought to jail for that performance.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
What is your connection to Carlos Sildren?
Carlos Sildren, I think, so he was, you know, like a larger-than-life character. You met him, you couldn't really miss him. He was...
Because you met him.
Yeah, yes. He went also to Denmark, so he's actually one of the artists that we brought for Pinoy's in 2015. And then we had an edition in Manila where we brought Scandinavian, so Danish, Swedish, Norwegian dancers and performers to Manila. We can dig into that, Carlos was our kind of fixer. You know, he knew everyone, so he could help us. He hosted us, he showed us around, and you know, like arranged a lot of things for us. So he was really kind of patron of alternative arts in Manila. He really believed in the power of, you know, everyday arts, including himself. But so that's the funny thing with Carlos is like he could act as, you know, very know-it-all. He was like, you know, a fairly short guy, you know, like very lively. He's bald, you know, like with a mustache, so very, very caricatural to some extent. But he was just very loving. You know, you met him, and if he liked you, which he liked everyone, you know, then, you know, you're his friend, and that's great. And he was a well of knowledge. He knew a lot of things about the Philippines. And I think that's also something that he wanted to learn about himself. I only spoke to him in English, even though I know that he could speak Tagalog, and I can to some extent.
Tagalog, which is the...
With the language of the official language of the Philippines. But we always spoke in English, and I always heard him speak English. So he was very international. He also was an artist.
And he lived in New York.
He lived in New York. He also like had a studio. I think he also did some performances there. He had a play, like a small play in Broadway to some extent. So he was really trying to do a lot of things. So we met him. He was in his late 40s, and he was extremely active, you know, and he went around here in Copenhagen. He really liked it. And he helped us really, you know, getting the sense of what animates Filipinos in there, right? I think he was thinking of himself more as a international, you know, character, but very anchored around Philippines.
And Manila.
And because specifically Manila.
Yeah, that was what I... You sent us this CNN 20-minute introduction to his work during the Manila Biennale in 2018. They made this interview with him, and like he ends this interview by saying, "I'm a lucky man who finds luck, love, and purpose living here in Manila." And then just knowing the next year he's in Madrid, that was like kind of hard.
That's a hard life. Also, like the end of his.
Seemed so joyful during those interviews, and
he was also very good at, you know, not letting anything getting through kind of, you know. So he wanted to always focus on the right things, but he was also very politically engaged. Hence, you know, like getting in the way of the established Catholicism and the church, and also the new president, Rodrigo Duterte, which he was a very vocal dissident, and that eventually, you know, drove him to Madrid. But
was he won the election in 2016?
Yes. So Rodrigo Duterte is kind of named the before its time, like the Asian Donald Trump, right?
Okay.
He's a populist. He he was a mayor of the third city in the Philippines called Davao, which was then crippled by drug dealing. It was a platform for drug dealers. It was run by thugs and all that. So the way that he was doing it, he wants to pride himself into an action man, right? Somebody who's not being intimidated. So what he did is he hired mercenaries to kill drug dealers and make Davao a clean city, which he managed to do. But he also, like, he's a known sexist, machist, promoting, you know, like, over masculinity.
Yeah.
And on those terms, you know, kind of the same way that Donald Trump is getting elected, that Bolsonaro is, you know, is being also like getting a big chunk of population around him, is that they're promoting this image of violence sometimes is good and necessary in, you know, in when the evil is coming to you. So he got elected in 2016, and the tactic that he used in as being a mayor, he used it on a full scale in the whole country. So there were these extrajudiciary killings where he basically authorized people to kill anyone who was suspected of dealing with anything, any type of drugs, either dealing or even suspected of consuming, and without any, you know, anyone being brought to court. So there were horrific stories of, you know, like people driving by in a scooter, shooting people just on a assumption. Or it was also a good way for, you know, some people to just eliminate opponents or people they don't like to some extent. So that was very tough to read about, of course, because, you know, like from here. But to get back to Carlos, when we went there, so those killings were happening as we, you know, we were there, and Duterte was already elected. So so Carlos Celarán was also like a very avid dissident of Rodrigo Duterte on social media a lot, and also like vocally. He would give interviews. He would do. He would help artists that were, you know, against the government, which is a very difficult position to sustain when you live in Manila and when these killings are happening. Which, so he was getting threats. He was getting, you know, like any type of...
hacking.
Yeah, exactly. So
harassment.
Exactly. And also, like, eventually, like, he was threatened to be thrown in jail and for a longer time this time. So he had to move to Madrid because I think he had a Spanish passport as well. But unfortunately, I think that whole harassment and, you know, like really being on the forefront took a toll on his health. So unfortunately, he died in Madrid 2 years ago. But still then, you know, like in any interviews that you could see, he would never show that he was affected or anything. You know, for him, it was positivity, but in a way that it's a fight to be positive about things. And I think that defines a lot of Filipinos, you know, and I think one of the thing about Filipinos is that they will power through, you know.
Shake my hand, you wanna make- Make me a man. Make me a man. You wanna have a great big plan. You see eye to eye and a great big stance. You wanna, oh, walk up and a shake up my hand.
Just to hear how these changes are.
go even to Japan, to the sometimes to the U.S. and here in Denmark to be an au pair. So I think it's not necessarily only au pair, but it's also like in the Philippines not being able to create enough opportunities to
make a nice life.
Exactly, to have a decent life out there. And it's not because there's no talent or no, you know, like a richness out there. It's just that it's the divide is much much higher. So here, you know, being an au pair is much better than being a nurse in the Philippines, you know, an educated nurse, for example. You will earn much more, you know, by taking care of somebody else's family and living your own in the Philippines than you know, working full time or working, you know, back to back jobs in the Philippines. And that's, I guess, the problem. I don't know. That's, I think ultimately people are happy, but I also don't believe that people will say if they weren't happy.
Yeah.
You know, you'll just power through.
We were just talking about, we had this little break now. We just talked about,
Welcome to the second half.
Yeah, yeah.
Of Denmark.
You just talked about Manila being overwhelming, like volume-wise, and the amount of
poverty or like just impressions.
Impressions, yeah.
It's also like the whole, I think it's something that we don't get as much in Europe anymore. Like when you travel in a lot of cities in Western Europe, it's all very similar. A big city is a big city. A big avenue is a big avenue. You'll find your way in. In Manila, it was just so completely overwhelming for me, even though I went there, you know, when I was younger and a kid, but always with my parents and all. But as an adult, we went there in 16 or 17. And also we stayed at Carlos Seldrán's house.
Is that inside Intramuros?
No, that was not Intramuros because it's the historical.
Makati.
Yeah, in Makati.
Wow.
So we were in like a big tower, you know, with there were guards at the entrance. So and he was living also like he had another apartment where there's also a guard, you know. So it's very weird because when you go to Manila, it's just a sheer amount of people and the density and then the warmth that comes on top. It's noisy everywhere. There's people around you all the time. So that's in itself very, very overwhelming. And then you'll have the very contrasty experience in the city. So you'll be in an area very, you know, very nice, very exotic, you know, with palm trees in the middle of the street and nice houses. Next turn, you know, there'll be a bunch of people sleeping in the street. Kids sleeping in the street, begging, you know, like restaurants, you know, that are fully like, you know, having a party and the next door is like an old grandma trying to sell, you know, like dehydrated milk or something like that. So it's just very, very hard to, you know, get all these experience and knowing how to feel about it. And also because there's Manila, I don't know how many, but I think it's like 20 million people, and then there are going to be pockets of extreme poverty, right? So like people living in garbage kind of neighborhood, right, and living there and, you know, building houses and out of nothing, right? So like some kind of hot rod metals and wood that they can take scraped from the trash, and that's where they live, you know, no water, no electricity, and then so, and you see that and you smell it and, you know, you hear it, it's hard. It's very hard. But at the same time, you know, it's a very old, beautiful city, the whole Intramuros part, you know, with the old walls from the Catholic Church and the old houses and, you know, very touristy somehow. There's big parks. So it's a very hard thing to take in, to be honest, to be in Manila. And as I was saying earlier, it's like, I don't know how Carlos Seldrán loved Manila so much, because I spent 10 days there, and I just wanted to come home at the end because there was just so much. But yeah, maybe give me 6 months more and I'll fall in love with it.
Yeah. Maybe you have already been, maybe you already told me, but your family is from where in
Yeah, in so there are two, so it's the main island, but they're 2 hours away from Manila.
From Manila, yeah. Okay.
So they're not living in Manila itself, but they're not too far,
okay,
right?
Okay.
So they're still in the same kind of region.
Yeah, okay, okay.
So yeah, that's where I go when I'm
When you're there.
When I'm there.
Yeah.
And that's where also like a large chunk of my family is still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my mom is like, kid, like she's the second oldest of family of 8 or 9, you know, and my dad has like 4 other siblings, and all of them have at least 3 kids, and now there's like numbers of babies that I don't, you know the names, because so many. So it's like all these, you know, like big chunk of the family that I know I'm related to, but I don't that I don't know, and that I see only like, you know, every 5 years or something. So that's also a weird feeling.
But is there also a part of your heart that, you know, feels like home when you're in?
I think there's also, of course. Yeah. I think there's the whole also like this unspoken part of your identity that's being spoken to. You know,
exactly.
It's all of a sudden, you know, like I still feel, you know, like I grew up in France. I'm living for 10 years in Denmark. It's a very westernized, polite world, but I still have this feeling of being an outlier, even though I shouldn't be. But you know, I'm
outlier.
You know, I still feel. I know, like I remember when I was, you know, 20. I started going to concerts in Paris. I was into rock music and all that. Still am, but remember being the first, you know, the first time going there in a concert hall. I'm the only non-white guy in there.
Yeah.
I grew up there, right? That was my city. And still now today, I'm still feeling like, okay, this is, I still feel odd. But in the Philippines, everybody looks like me. I still understand everybody who talks, you know, so even though I haven't lived there for like ever, but I still feel that we can relate, you know, we look at each other as like, right, you're my kind.
Yeah.
But I don't know why.
It makes so much sense that, you know, it just matters how you look, you know, and you know, it's just to stand out in a crowd. That's just that's another way you are in the room, you know.
No, for sure. But yeah, I don't know. So that's why, like Manila, it's very, very overwhelming, and it's like I feel like it's not me, but it's not too far, right? It's still something that I understand to some level, like how people are and what's the vibe of the place. They're also very wonderful places, you know, like very alternative bars, alternative, you know, like galleries, you know, like that doesn't look anything like galleries that you will see here, you know, very very blank, white, clean. There it's like everything is living, you know, like the location is living and breathing, and you know, it's just very different, but also like very exhilarating. So you're experiencing something completely different that you still understand. And that's the part of Manila that, okay, that sounds great.
Should we talk some more about Carlos Celdran and his connection to Pinoys?
I mean, Carlos Celdran, so he came here in 2015. I think we showed a bunch of his art pieces also, because he was a painter. He made some calligraphic work and, you know, political posters and all. And he also made some talks about actually Manila, and especially also like Marcos and Imelda Marcos, so the wife of the dictator. There's a documentary, I think, that was shown in Copenhagen Pix, and that was shown in DR also, called The Kingmaker. So really the story of of the Philippines through the eyes of Imelda Marcos. So okay. He was very fascinated about her because, of course, Marcos was the dictator, but she was the one pulling the strings, you know, okay. in the back. So she it was a very polarizing character, and he made like a show, a talk, you know, a performance out of it, telling the story of the woman who, you know, did the most and the worst for the Philippines.
Mm. Is that the tour called Living La Vida, Imelda Tour?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it would show up, you know, in high heels and, you know, like, because she's known
that to... That was his guided tour?
No, that was another performance
okay.
that he did.
His talks about Imelda.
Yeah.
And how to live your life.
Like her.
Yeah,
in
like
in a
her.
Very absurd okay. way. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he would show up in high heels because she's known to have... owned like a...
She's still alive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, she's still living.
And his
somehow.
Son is...
His son is...
Getting elected, maybe?
Yeah, he's a candidate for presidency.
Wow.
And that's the thing with crazy things, you know, like the son of a dictator might be the next president.
And then she can pull the strings again.
Exactly.
Wow, yes. That's so frightening.
It is very frightening. So watch The Kingmaker. I don't know where it was, but it was on the air. And it's very explaining how Philippines is also like very cyclically ill. You know, it will forget. Now,
okay.
as a population, you know, I think this is the whole powering through. You know, it will be good. Okay, so, you know, we forget about the bad things and we give everybody a chance.
Yes.
Including, you know, the one who wronged us in the past. That's very... I think that's very Christian to do.
It is Christian, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so he made that, Carlos Sildren made that performance here in Cinematical.
Mm.
We had also like a big like performance, two-night performance in what used to be Dance Helena in Carlsberg,
yeah.
Buen. So that was, yeah, he was very ill that night and he still powered through. He sang the Filipino anthem,
okay.
and then I had to take a cab and drive him to his hotel because
wow.
okay,
he
okay.
was so sick. But then, yeah, I think we connected very, like, us at Pinoy's. So, you know, like, we were 20 years younger than him,
yeah.
most of us. So I think he really chaperoned us into, like, kind of also understanding what is the Filipino root that we're looking for, right? And one thing I think that really started to define me then that I didn't really understand. So I've always struggled with trying to find out what part of me is Filipino and what should I kind of keep or fight against or whatever that is, right? What defines me as a Filipino, right? So I already was on my journey to find out, you know, like by working with this collective, you know, learning more about the Philippines and all that. But I always felt guilty to try to promote the Philippines when I've never lived there, when I have secondhand culture, kind of. Mm. And once, you know, we were in the city with Carlos and I told him that, like, I feel like an imposter, you know, trying to promote something that I only know partially.
Mm.
And he was like, dude, shut the fuck up. You know, you're as Filipino as I am. All of us are Filipinos, you know. If you feel that connection, then you already are. You don't have to fight against it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're French, you're Filipino, you might be Danish at some point, and, you know, that's going to be it.
Mm.
It's not for everyone to define who you are.
Mm.
So if you're already on your journey to do that, great, do it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
But it didn't really hit me before that.
Yeah.
You know, I was always struggling when I was growing up in France. I was trying to be the most French person, pushing back my Filipino roots.
Yeah.
And then when I was here, then, you know, like, I think I also realized when I worked at the French embassy, I was promoting French culture. You know, I was part of the, you know, people who were kind of defined French culture here in Denmark. I was like, okay, I don't have to prove anything to anyone anymore about the French part.
Yeah.
Oh, what about the part that I pushed my whole life?
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, stemmed, I think, my journey to try to find out that part of myself. So I think also like finding that voice in Carlos, you know, like really driving us into
I really get that, but the thing you are afraid of, you know, is probably the voices from the Philippine people, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I really understand that getting his quotation mark stamp acceptance was like really.
It really helped. It really relieved a lot of us as well. Because I talked to other from the Pinoys group. You know, I mean, they all had the same, right? We all feel like maybe it shouldn't be us, but if not us, who? Especially also like when, you know, there was all these Duterte and still is, and, you know, like this whole killing stuff, then you're like, who is supposed to be talking about that? But yeah, so he has been a great shining light for us. And also then we had in 2000, and if you can redact this, I don't remember when we were there, but I don't know. I think it was 2016, right?
The year after.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then we went to Manila. So we got a grant from what is sadly disappeared. It's called CKU, is the Center for Kultur og Udvikling, that closed down. So that was helping really Denmark to connect with other countries, you know, in the world. So it would help initiatives from Scandinavia to export artists, right?
Yeah.
So what we did is that we had a troupe of performers from Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and Finland. So I think there were 12 performers that we all flew to Manila. And what we planned is that we actually kind of got the authorization to perform in an old theater that was closed down for 30, 40 years. It was abandoned, basically. And it was under renovation, but it was not nearly open, you know, to the public. I think it just got opened last year. So by then, it was really decrepit. It was there was no electricity, no running water. It was just like, it was the foundation was being rebuilt, kind of. But we got authorization, you know, to do that because it was part of the re-establishment of that place. And we performed there an immersive kind of performance with a troupe. So you would go into the theater and then there were, you know, the dance performance around.
Around the audience or inside, the audience.
Yeah, so the audience was guided in the theater. That was we installed lights all ourselves. We cleaned up everything ourselves. We bought a lot of things. We hired also like a Danish engineer to come with us, you know, to install everything because of course we needed generators. We needed a bunch of things. It probably wouldn't pass the health inspection here in Denmark, but hey, in the Philippines it's a bit more open. it was very good, and we made it free. We performed for 2 nights in a row, and it was sold out both nights. It sold out, like the tickets were taken. But and people were just, we didn't want to make an event only for the elite there that could only afford paying, right? So we had it open for everyone, and it was a big success. We had a lot of good critique, but also just people who are not necessarily seeing arts, on their everyday life. So we really wanted to have those people in.
Then, so people had good reactions.
And I think they were just very not used to this type of performances, like the immersive performances. A lot of performances, I think the Philippines is also very demonstrative, right? The Scandinavian way is more showing and not telling, right? But that was fun to go with a troupe of white Scandinavians in Manila.
Experiencing
very green in the whole, you know, like we had our engineer, Danish engineer, who, you know, would drink as if it was, you know, like a night in Copenhagen, or like you don't know where you are here.
Did you experience any problematic stuff or challenges?
I think the most common thing was food poisoning a lot. Because, like, for example, you couldn't drink water from the tap.
No.
And that's something, you know, like, oh, you brush your teeth and, you know, like, drink the water.
Yeah.
So
one of
our performer was sick for like 3 days in a row.
Okay.
Yeah. They were trying street food. I'm like, maybe that's not a good idea.
Okay.
We were in a basement of that theater that we needed to clean. It was very humid. So when we came out there, like, all our like legs and were bitten by mosquitoes that we couldn't see. So there was a lot of very green experience, and we're like, you know, like a troop of very European looking people going in the street of Manila. And I still remember, like, going, you know, in one of these streets, and then you turn, and then there were kids sleeping in the street, right? And that was, I think, a very big reality shock for some, right? Because they never saw that. And for me, neither, to be honest. So it's wow, okay, so we're not home here. But at the same time, you know, it was also, like, a lot of very great conversations that we had with, you know, some cultural actors. We met with the Danish embassy. We had a very posh dinner in a private residence at the Danish ambassador's house. Too posh to my taste, but that's you know, something else. But you know, there were, so I think there were a lot of great discussions that we managed to have. But also I think for myself, I was really, you know, Duterte just got elected, you know, these killings were happening, so I was actually just asking people without taking sides, you know, like, hey, what do you think of Duterte? And I had, you know, very passionate answers from both sides. And, you know, I was also very aware of not being home. So, you know, like, maybe don't be too critical in this Uber. You don't know who the driver is, right?
Yeah.
So I was just being very honest and almost blue about it. Like, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
But I was very... And some people are, you know, like, hey, we're poor here. We need someone to shake things up. He might be the one. 5 years later, it turns out that he's not. But, you know, it's the way of seeing things. But yeah, so Carlos there, so he hosted us. He was showing us around. We saw one of his famous tour, you know, like going around explaining the story of Intramuros, how the Spanish conquistador went there and then abandoned, and then the American took over. And then also just was a, and you could see how passionate he was about Manila, and how also everybody knew him. That was really amazing to see. And we're like, oh, I'm not a tour person, but this one I digged. That was very nice.
Wonderful. I think
that
might be a good ending for this interview.
Yes. We have talked about so much.
Yeah. It feels like we talked like 3 minutes, but we talked for like more than 3 minutes. So for about an hour. So
Yeah.
But thank you so much for, you know, telling us all these things. And
yeah, I think we need to talk sometime again.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
But also, like, yeah, we haven't, you know, Pinoys have been also like a bit quiet during like the whole Corona thing. So now we also need to do things again.
Yeah, so maybe it's a good idea to just ask, when is the next Pinoys event?
Yeah, follow us, you know, like, and we'll find out. But yeah,
you have Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, we are on Instagram and Facebook. And we're regularly, you know, like, trying to promote like things that we're seeing from Filipinos all over the world.
Do you have like in a stage or some place you usually host events at? Or,
well, we're trying to do it in Denmark most of the time, but we're seeing if we can actually do that. Otherwise, we're thinking of Manila again.
Yes.
But I would really love to do it again here in Denmark.
Yeah, Cinematikket or...
Yeah, we had film showings at Cinematikket in Grand Teatel, when there used to be Danse Helena. But... I think right now it's about how do we get talented Filipino artists, you know, overseas?
Yeah, because we still have Corona.
Exactly.
Problem.
That's the main challenge right now.
Mm.
But, you know, hopefully we can do that soon and, you know, like, get all these Filipino artists showing what they can do. There are so many of them, I think.
Wow.
You know, hard, difficult environment helps people actually be creative. At least the Filipino do.
Yeah. And then the Filipino Film Festival?
Yeah, so that's part of Pinoy's as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now I didn't check like the Copenhagen Pix program, but there's always a bunch of, you know, like good choices. If not Filipino, at least South Asian. Yes. Fortunately, that's the only, you know, outlet here in Denmark that we have for non-traditional movies, at least.
Is PIX now? Or
I think it's next week.
Okay,
right?
So it's probably going to be like then a week before.
Yeah, when this gets released, then people have been at CBH PIX.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed Copenhagen PIX.
Yeah. Saw the nice Philippine movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just so curious. I just want to see a Philippine movie.
Yeah.
I have to check out the program for CPH PIX.
Yeah, sure.
And then, but I'm also curious when you have the next film festival.
Yeah,
go follow the Pinoy's Festival on Instagram.
Yes, I will be one to follow.
Great.
Yeah,
and good to hear.
And I think we're gonna speak again.
Yeah.
Next year.
For sure, when
we know some more and
maybe
you have an event coming up, we could make some noise for that.
Definitely. But great initiative. I think it's great, you know, that you can invite, you know, me and also all the, you know, wonderful people that you've been talking to. Looking forward also to see who else you have on the track. That's going to be nice.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, thanks.
So thanks for the snack.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Tak fordi I lytter med til det her afsnit af Denmark. Der kommer snart flere afsnit, så vi snakkes ved. Og følg, og subscribe, og follow. Hej, hej.